Welcome, everybody, to the Ricardo's Rules of Resilience podcast, the podcast where we give you the tools to withstand and recover from difficult times. I'm your co-host, Coach Alton, along with Coach Ricardo. And today, you guys, we got a super special guest. We got Dylan Scott in the house, DecaFit Ultra Champion and DecaFit Midwest Elite Champion, among other things. Thank you for coming on today, Dylan.
Yeah, guys, absolutely. Thanks for the invite, bringing me in, talking a little bit about resilience.
Yeah. Before we get into talking about the Midwest DecaFit Weekend, a lot of our listeners, we have listeners that download from as far away as Japan who probably weren't at the DecaFit Weekend here recently. So let's just hear a little bit about yourself. Give them a background of who you are, Dylan Scott.
So for anybody who knows me in the DECA community, they probably know me as like the hybrid raccoon. We'll get to that. But I think if we go back to just like where does anything still make from a good state for me? I mean, man, I come from close country and track and field background. You know, growing up like most kids in the U.S., we played super young. So I played soccer from, you know, from the ages, say, 5 or 6, all the way up until I was 12. And in that was an okay little soccer player. But it wasn't until I got to, you know, middle school, high school, where we just made the shift over to close country, track and field. And after that, I was okay. I was nothing special. But I think maybe around my senior year, things started to turn a corner for me, started winning races, started being competitive at a state level. And, you know, kind of got over into a decent couple of years as a high school distance runner. And then, you know, unfortunately, going into my senior year of high school, I suffered a back injury, which led to some nerve problems down the right side of my body. And that took me out of competitive sport for, you know, a good 3 years. Redshirt in college, wasn't able to run, transfer home to a school that doesn't have a close country program, finally get a fixed and back right now about the age of 21 and started picking sport back up again and was able to be competitive for at least 3 years close country runner. But then he was about like, you know, you graduate, what are you going to do now? And actually, hybrid fitness world was starting to kick around. Found myself in their Spartan races for a bit. And then landed in the hybrid realm around 2020. And things just really took off for me from there. Once I got healthy and was able to really train to what I thought my potential was, which turned out was a very high amount of volume, a lot of hard work. Like, I started creating it and going after more and more. And really, it's kind of led up to this moment over the last 3 years, culminating and seeing a lot of success in pregnancy. But, you know, it was about a 3 year span of wondering if I was able to be a competitor. Now, it's been a long journey to find myself like a kind of little podiums recently, which I've been very, you know, lucky to do.
Well, you know, I'm so glad you talked about that, you know, that difficult time. Can you, you know, as you know, the theme of the podcast is resilience. Can you talk about some of the things that helped you to be able to withstand those tough times when you weren't even sure if you're going to be able to compete?
Yeah. So it was really a rough, you know, in my life. So we're looking at, you know, late 17, well, I'm geared up for what I think is going to be a year where I'm like, I've got state championships on the line. You know, I'd been really competitive the years before, silver, bronze, and I'm like, all right, the gold's there for the taking. And it's just one single training run. I remember very vividly August 10th of 2013. I'm on a treadmill, and while I'm running, I drop like a blood knot, and I shuffle my feet to move it out of the way. And whatever I did that day, weakened me back in an area that caused a lot of issues with me sending. And so I went from being in probably the best shape of my life at that point to I can't run a slump because the whole like right side down to the Achilles just lights and fire with nerve pain. And we spent a lot of time figuring out. I'm driving back and forth to, you know, different specialists. And I mean, it took a toll on like my mental health, because that was the area of my life where I could, you know, really get away from things. So we get to the point where, you know, I'm trying to cope with what's going on at home. The home life's not going that great. And where I would go to kind of deal with everything would be to go out to the woods and run. But now you can't run anymore. So it's like your coping mechanisms are gone. You still need a stressful environment around you because you can't just change that. You're, you know, 17, 18-year-old kid. You don't have that much control with those other things. And so I head to college, and I'm like, we'll get this room. You know, we'll do the rehab that we need to do. We'll see if we can get things fixed. And in that juncture there, I was planning on coming to college, running with people, making the same kind of bonds and relationships I made with my cross country training team in high school. Well, when you're injured, you can't really do it. Nobody's cross training with you. You're working out near yourself. You don't really create those relationships. You're on the team, but you're not on the team. So there was like a lot of social. Just there was no adhesion. Like nothing stupid. So I was kind of very much a winner, and then I make things any. So we get to the point where I'm not getting healthy. I'm not racing. I'm like, why am I here? Ledge, I'm away from Cologne. So transferred to Cologne, the finish up. The school that I came back to is going to Landon University, little Cologne town school. Switched my major over. I'm a pre-med major. When I came back, and I'm just like, I'm going to try and use my study to figure out my body, to figure out how the heck I can fix this, because it's all in the word of living on top. I think from a resilient standpoint, the one thing that I refused to stop doing was pushing myself, because I felt that if I ever just gave up on the idea that I would come back someday, when I lost hope, it was a, if I ever said, this is life, I'm not going to be a competitive athlete anymore, my body's done, being done, it would be done. It was to the point where I would do silly stuff. Like, I would lay down, get up and spend a second, lay down, get up and spend a second. Because I was like, great, things not in pain. Things the one thing I could do pain-free kind of, and sort of stressful in the Monday, and something like a birthday, but I play like a birthday, but you know what? We're going to do as many of those as we can. Well, you do for like this been 7 days, just like this seems difficult, and I can kind of do it pain free. All right, keep it in the brain. Just never let yourself get used to being comfortable because of scale of wisdom. Finally, one thing that been late into my sophomore year of college, I go to a specialist in Greensboro, North Carolina, who figures out like, hey, we need to put you on a specific medication. That's going to help with the referred nerve pain, and we'll put you on higher dosage and then for a while and then just really taper it off. And that should like work. You're probably going to be taking medication for, as long as, you know, you're going to be a competitive athlete, but this, and it did. It finally allowed me to start training again. It dampened the pain down to where it was like a manageable level, and now to the point where it's almost non-existent. As long as I'm, you know, continuous on a very low dose of what I take. It's wonderful being by maybe through this swing of things. My numbers, the one thing that never did leave was that mental edge. And so when I started to bump into it, and it was like, hey, it's time to start getting uncomfortable again. It's time to start training hard again. I was like, oh yeah, mom, we're still used to them. That never went away. Like, we know him. And so then it was nice to come into cross country, get to race one more time, get to wear a college jersey. You know, that really meant a lot to be able to get there. But then we have to figure out, what are we going to do as a competitive athlete? There was nothing that I ever could think through high school or through a little bit of college that anybody would have said, hey, this guy one day can compete on a world stage at anything. There's never been special. Moms weren't that great. You know, the only thing that I ever remember people remarking about is that that was it. They were like, he's good and he really works hard. Like, he'll run himself into the ground the end day. And I mean, like, I valued that, and I was really happy that that was what people saw in me. Because I thought, you know, that's a very transferable career. If you're willing to work really, really hard and be uncomfortable and that will go to other things. And so like 2019, I'm trying to figure out what do I want to do. Because I'm still, I'm like, yeah, I can compete again. Let's go. So start getting into the Spartan scene. And then after a couple of races there, I'm like, okay, I'm a decent trail runner, but, the obstacle proficiency is not there. And I'm starting to gear for 2022 or in 2020 season for the second time. And then like COVID shuts everything down. So I'm back home. There's a lot of, there's a lot of free time because you're just sitting there waiting to figure out what is the world going to do. I'm doing the work I can do to the capacity, but with a five travel job during a time where they're like, don't travel at all. There's not really much training. So I'm like, well, I can't really go anywhere. So I'm looking around and then I get, somebody sends me this thing and they're like, hey, this is, you should give this a try. It's the Fire Rocks BCF. It's the Virtual Championships of Fitness. It's four workouts plus like 4 weeks. There's a bodyweight division. There's an equipment division. Equipment division needs a rower and 235-pound dumbbells. I didn't really have those, so I was like, "What do you want to do?" And so I take part in that. And by the end of it, I finish like I win the age group, and I finish I think 10th overall, which is nothing special. I mean, 10th overall is fine, but I calculate in. I'm like, this is a bodyweight workout. I'm 6'2" and lanky as I'm getting out. Like, I can't do lunges and air squats and burpees as fast as other people. But the thing that really cooled me, I mean, I'll never forget, is I look at the leaderboard and I just see a ton of Olympics. And I'm just like, these are all over the world. Like, that's Ireland, that's the UK. Like, oh, they're right there. That's Germany. That's Slovakia. Like, okay. So my 10th, and these are all over the world. Maybe I'm not a bad athlete. So what ends up happening is by 2021 in April, I take probably my first choice. That's where all the fiber starts for me. I'm trying to qualify through a second BCF. They were like, hey, your top three guys, if you finish there, we're going to put you in this elite wave in Dallas. And I went through three workouts, and I was like, man, the longest workout's 18 minutes long. The whole race isn't weak. Like, why are we predicating getting in off of an 18-minute workout when everything is an hour long, and I'm good once we get past 45 minutes? I'm not windy with me, to be honest. The reason why is just put me in here. I know they finished like sixth in this, but you gave us a bunch of CrossFit workouts, and I'm a shitty CrossFit. Like, I can't get it. So you go to Dallas, and I don't get in the elite wave, but I race the pro race down there, and we finish. I win. And I look at the times and I go, okay, the two guys that beat me in the elite wave are Hunter McIntyre and David Mugeeta. Everybody else I beat. And I'm like, you were first that day. And you put me in that wave. I'm going to finish third. And I think that caught a lot of people's eye. So it was a very crazy trajectory for me because it goes first race Dallas, second race US Championship, second place, third race I'm in Leipzig, Germany, and I'm sixth in Worlds. And I'm like, games fast. I'm taking into account that like this is a pretty new sport, and I just happen to get kind of lucky. The sport's gonna grow and I'm not gonna keep up. And has it been the case? And so around the coming into the second year of like 2022, I'm doing a lot of Fire Rock stuff and now catch wind of DecaFit. I end up shifting and start doing booth. So I do my first DecaFit, which is a road show in New Jersey. So this would have been by that point it's 2023. So I've raced a whole nother Fire Rock season going through that. I was like, my first year was just kind of like lucky. It turned out not to be that way. I make it to Worlds again. I finished fifth at Worlds in Las Vegas. And I'm like, all right, well, maybe I'm good at this. Like, it put me down. Yeah. It turns out I'm actually not bad at this. So then I catch wind of the DecaFit stuff. I'm in the process. I had moved from South Carolina to New Hampshire, and I lived up in New Hampshire from 2020 to like 2020, too late. So I'm moving back down. There's a DecaFit roadshow in New Jersey on the way. So I come putting in. I got a Prius. I've got a youth who was looking at making a Prius. I've got my dog, and I've got my hamster, and I've got my pregnant, soon-to-be wife. Now, we're running out. Like, it's going to be boys. And I'm like, who's going to stop off here and race in this next cycle dome in somewhere in New Jersey? And like an hour and a half before the race, I'm going to grab something off the bed. I look the entire right side of my neck. For some reason, I don't know, I've always had a bad time with like this muscle that runs down the back of my neck, connects to my shoulder muscle. I've locked it up so many times. So I'm like, I can't look to the right. But I'm like, you're about to race like this. I can't run. I can't turn my neck. Well, not there. We raced the first time in Decafit. It honestly, it hurt me so bad. I was surprised at how free it was. And my time was nothing. It was like 32 something. But managed to win and was like, this is pretty, like, this is tough. The assault bike just ripped me. I've got to get better at this. So start getting into the Dakar races, head down to West Palm Beach in September, race that race, which was where the world record was set, Mar Island. Super fast race. I mean, like, might have been the fastest, honestly, in history that so far, because there were, I think there might have been 900 or 300 minutes.
That one for the ages, for sure.
Yeah, it was so fast. And you know, get into that, start racing that on like the world level, go to world championships there. The first year didn't race that great. I think it might have been eighth. And then this past year was there and finished fourth. And I really enjoyed, you know, the dichotomy between the two races of, you've got Decafit, which is a lot, when I explain to people, I say it's a lot faster, it's a lot sharper. And it's really about execution there and just game planning, because there's certain parts of the race that create the breaks. And knowing exactly where you need to be at and how you need to feel through each portion of the race to know, hey, I can or cannot make this move now. Whereas Firebox, I find it to be like this long grind, where you basically, for a smaller guy, like me, you make it through the first 15 minutes of the race, and then it just becomes this, you start running, you start working, and turn away at everything. And the move with proximity to the finish of the race at DECA tends to happen later. Whereas in Firebox, like, it's pretty well known that whoever leads coming out of the sled pull is normally your winner. That's been a very, like, good predictor. And then when you look over it in Decafit, it's whoever kind of leads coming out of, like, the bike tends to be your guy.
Yeah.
And that's where your brakes hang. So it's fun to race both of them. And then, of course, we had, you know, let's see, eight weekends ago it is now. I've been training too much. Right in Indiana, we'll just say it that way, with the DECA Ultra. So they announced the DECA Ultra, and my inbox gets with people going, you going to races? Like, you're the guy, you love doing volume. Like, they just created a race for you. You're going to benefit five times in a row. And I'm like, we'll see. It really just depends on, you know, work schedule, life schedule. I've got a, you know, 1.5-year-old now that is my wife, to the point where she's like, Dylan, if you go race again, I'm gonna beat you out of the head with a pan. Like, I can't. I need an aging break or this beard, even maybe sometimes. Well, I love it, but it's gonna be a little while. But it did.
Boys, let me tell you, that's raising boys.
It's been so much fun. Right. It's really early days. You know, and they change so much so fast to this age. Every time I leave for a week to go on a trip, it's so much fun. And have him as a partner. It just so happened that I was going to be going for work anyway. And I was like, hey, I'm just going to extend this trip out here. You know, the day. So he was like, we go into that weekend, and I'm really worried that I'm even going to be able to compete. I had so many, like, foot and ankle issues just pop up out of nowhere over the 3 weeks leading into it. I would just didn't do anything to hurt myself, suddenly had a bunch of medial ankle issues on the left leg, and I was like, "Who am I going to turn 400 times?" And I was like, "And
yeah."
So luckily, like one of the companies I work with, I was using a lot of their CBD rubs and stuff to help with the inflammation and everything and recovery. And then I also worked with this Quam tape company and started using a lot of their stuff to help stabilize the ankle. And they healed up really fast. And I was lucky that I showed up on Saturday and was able to race that morning. And I get out on Saturday and I'm like, all right, this will really tell me how I'm going to be for Sunday. I wake up Sunday morning. and then it was really going into it, figuring out how fast can we go? What's the best way to attack this? And maybe a lot of time just from planes and driving to get to Fort Wayne. And I was thinking, about the competition, of course. I'm thinking, all right, so do I race to the people I'm racing against, or do I race to the club? Because when you're racing, you're racing to win. Unfortunately, one of the better guys that was going to be coming out there, Isaac Sanderson, his flight, got a little messed up coming from Utah. So he had to dip, and he couldn't make it. But then I'm still calculating in my head. I'm like, well, we got one guy who's a 252 marathoner. He was fairly strong up here. And then we have Grady Jackson, who, he's a good, trail athlete and stuff. So he's going to be, a tough run. What I came into was I had ran all the numbers and done all this stuff, and I just said to myself, you're just going to forget it. Everything controlled, and we don't want to feel comfortable until we've been racing for 2 years. If we get into it, we're working, then we're right. I could probably, make it another 50 minutes. But if we're moving along again, I'm like, so I really went by feel, made sure not to cut off. I didn't want to watch. I didn't want anybody telling me splits. I just wanted to I just wanted to be dumb and run. And that was kind of how I reached it. And it turned out that my expectations were, well, I can go 2 hours, 50 minutes or so. You can run 34s. And I get through 3.5. And then Jeff decides to let Rick, what I'm running. He's like, he's averaging 32.10. Be like, man, he's doing it. I got boom. At some point, we 3.5 years. And I remember, the second one, I'm leaning against the lady who won, Brooklyn Nichols. And I thought, she liked me. Yeah, I could get the album. He's like, yeah, that was great. And after about 3.5 years, we're going to get back. I'm going, we're going to be losing. She goes, you're going to be too. So, I would say that we definitely started getting to the point where fatigue was setting in, hamstrings start cramping up, and then fourth round, I was like, man, I got to just shut my eyes for 33 minutes and get on with this, because I'm tired.
Yeah. Yeah, you were blazing.
I thought, just to rewind a little bit, going back, when you were talking about when you were just doing what you could do, one of the Ricardo's rules that we talk about is, not using the word can't unless it's followed by yet. And I feel like you really exemplified that with, it'd be very easy for you to just kind of sit in and be like, oh, I can't run, I can't do this, and kind of just give up on your dreams. But you were really focused on just doing what you could and moving forward. And I really appreciate that story and being vulnerable for our listeners. I thought that was really great. And kind of talking about the ultra, I feel like that's pretty insane. You didn't work in your splits, because I remember watching and you were like, I think your first three laps were right on the money. It was 32.10, 32.02, and then 32.20. That's pretty insane.
Yeah. We don't have the exact splits, but I know I was within my first one and my third one were 1 second apart. It was 32.04 and 32.03 for the third one. And I think the second one might have been 32.20 something. I do love that saying, if you're going to say can't, you need to put yet in through it. Of course, we all have even stipulations on that. I can't back squat 700 pounds, put yet after that. It's also to measure, if you're being really defeatist about things that are possible, you have to learn it. It's there's understanding, you know, abilities and limits and all of that. But it's the question, where are you putting that cap? Are you putting a realistic cap on your limits? Are you putting like an unrealistic cap on your limits where you're saying, oh, I can't do this? And it's like, yeah, you could. With enough work, you could. And so I fully believe in taking that approach, you know, to just about everything. Again, that's a transferable, you know, rule. That's a transferable thing. There are certain stuff, like, I don't know anything about computer programming. That doesn't mean I could learn how to do it. But if I said, oh, you can't do that. But if I follow with yeah, then yeah, I could sit down and I can learn computer programming. And I could become an IT. And it just depends on, but that's putting a realistic, like, okay, this is very achievable. You probably can't be the CEO of Apple. Like, that would seem to be quite unrealistic. And I'm not going to be like, yeah, because that's not a goal or an aspiration or anything I'm chasing.
Yeah. Obviously, you're right. I mean, we can take anything and turn it unreasonable, right? But very often, you've hit the nail on the head. It really, as my father would say, can't just means I'm unwilling to try. Very often. You know, you easily could have gotten to the place and everybody would have believed you and nobody would have blamed you if you said, I can't run it. Or I can't do a functional fitness test with 10 stations that includes throwing a 44-pound RAM over my head. It's just too likely to tweak all my nerve issues again, right? But instead, you know, you took the attitude of, well, I'm going to do what I can, not what I can't, and build into it. And next, you know, after years of that, now you didn't do this in a couple of weeks or a couple of months, but building on that attitude year after year after year in the long haul, now all of a sudden you're the champion of the first ever Deca Ultra and champion by light years. I mean, you were just all along out there by the end of the race. You know, just smoking it. And what's really interesting to me, you know, you've described yourself, and not everybody watches the video version of this. Some of our listeners are just listening to it, so they wouldn't necessarily see. As you said, you're 6 foot two, and I don't know, what do you weigh, 120 pounds?
I'm just under like 165.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of float around that area.
Yeah, 6'2", mid-160s, a very thin guy. So, you know, your build, you know, you also could look at it and say, no, I'm a runner. I'm not the guy that's going to be throwing the 60-pound ball around and 44-pound RAM over my head and, you know, 55-pound RAM for the lunges. You could also take that out, you know, and use your body type as an out. But instead, you played to your strengths and you conquered your weaknesses and lit it up. And part of that was your approach to burpees. I had never seen that form on burpees. Is that something you came up with?
Yeah. That was a little tricky, man. I was like, I noticed how fatigued, like your arms get trying to do it without that. And I was like, man, if I could just use my hips here, like I could go long wide with the legs and make this a kettlebell swing. And now how hard is a 44-pound kettlebell swing? Not hard at all. Like, you could do 20 of those and I'm good to go. So yeah, the limits are slower, but when you're doing a race where it's like, if you give up 5 seconds there, but you don't jack your heart rate, then it's totally worth it. That was a little technique that I played with. And I was like, yeah, I'm just going to kind of swing these things. Yeah. But that'll get me too much easier.
So for the viewers that aren't sure what he's talking about with his burpees, he kind of, when he's up at the top on his feet, he kind of swings it back a little bit in between his legs, gain some momentum. And yeah, I've never seen that. And I was kind of curious with training for the Ultra, what did that look like? Was it a lot of zone 2 work, or what was it like? Obviously, you got the secret sauce for whatever it is.
I'll be completely candid here. I didn't do any specific training for the Ultra. I really didn't. I was actually kind of stressing about it because I was talking to my wife, and I said, Maria, I haven't done anything like specific for this. I've just been working out like I normally do. I have not done a single like run through. Like, man, I've just been doing my workouts. I mean, when you look at, like, I trained a lot. I'm getting 25 to 3 years in a week. I'm spending a lot of time in the week. I do a lot of rowing. My running volume is maybe 45 miles a week. But I mean, when you take 45 miles a week of running, and then another 50 plus on the ergs, and then you take another 250 on bike, and then you put in weightlifting. As long as you do, like, you have so much of a base up under you, as long as you do a couple of, like, specific top-end things to make sure that you still have some power, but there's nothing about the DECA race that you have to be super, super specialized for. I do a lot of bike work already. The bike is what really makes or breaks the race a lot of times, and the shoulder stuff, I'm already running a good bit. And so it's a little different from like Fire Ox. You need to make sure that you practice your like wall balls and your sled work, because, you know, a wall ball is you either make the rep or you don't. So when you start blowing up there, you're kind of done for it. For your sled work, there's just like a peak power output and a peak amount of strength that you have to be able to exert. On the tanks, it's going to move, you know, it's just my focus. And so I knew that I had a really, really good threshold. And I think that you just have to build that. And I think honestly, rowing is one of the best ways to build like full body muscular endurance. And so if you're doing a bunch of rig work and then you do some sprints and stuff on top of that, to make sure that your heart rate can go up and that you've done like some lactic threshold work, and you're going to come in with a body that's ready to take a beating, to be honest, which is what that race, you know, that's what it asks for. It doesn't ask you to be that fast, that strong. It just asks, hey, can you just sit here on like this kind of uncomfortable line to take a beating for about 2.5 hours? it's something I'm pretty good at.
Well, you know, you've alluded to the fact that, you know, you never got cocky, and it took you a little while to get your confidence even to say, hey, I belong here. And for viewers or listeners that don't know, the reason you and I connected, even though we're both Lander University alumni, well, that's not how we connected.
No, is that true?
Yeah, I went to Lander University, Greenwood, South Carolina. Yeah,
you really did.
Yeah, I probably graduated before you were born, but yeah, that's where I've got my certificate. Right.
That's crazy. I had no clue.
Yeah.
Look at that. We got another Bearcat in the house. Let's go. Oi.
Yeah. Who knows if our producer will edit this out? But yeah, right there's the.
I don't know. You got the screen blurred, so that could say anything. Yeah. If you get a lot of puns, you're not wrong. You're not one of those things anymore.
Yeah. So that's not actually how we connected, but small world. But the way we connected was that you actually posted a picture where I'm in the background reffing you on the burpees, I think.
Yeah.
And we're shouting out, you know, hey, the DECA ref was locked in.
You were locked in. You man, that was intense. I was like, man, he's ripping away the nine Manson right now. Like with that face.
Man, well, you know, you guys are giving it your all. I gotta give it mine, you know.
You were.
I posted that, and a good friend of mine who's been in the DECA and the OCR community for a while, the comment he made was what a humble and grounded individual you are. And so could you just talk quickly about how it is that you stay humble and grounded?
Yeah. Thank you for that. And I think, was that Chris Marks?
Yeah.
He talked to me a lot during that DECA race. Like he's helped me out. And, you know, Chris and I have talked on and off, at races, and he's super great guy. Really, just supportive. My person.
He was my original DECA mentor.
He
get going.
Yeah, he's awesome. I like Chris Long. I don't really know. I feel like maybe some of it is knowing so much about sport and how good people are at certain things, that when I'm good at something, I understand that relative to, like I know how good rowers are. Like, people see Mo rowing, they're like, oh, he's really fast at rowing. And I'm like, actually, you know how fast he is. And then I'm like, running. My friends runners. And so it's hard for me to ever, like, look at things and not understand that there are guys out there that are going to just drag me. Why am I going to, like, beat my chest about being good? Like, I don't know. It just felt like pretty close is genuine, and it's not who I am. Like, occasionally, there are times when I'm training, and I do get so jacked up, like, on myself, and I'm like, I am the greatest, and I will be the greatest. But that's such, like, you have to have a little bit of that crazy in you to even believe that you can compete in a certain level. Like, there has to be a little bit of delusion. But I know that when I see people who, they're never critical of themselves, they're never supportive of other people, and they're just constantly telling you how great they are, I get sick of it. And I know that if I get sick of it, other people would get sick of it if it was coming from me. So I'm going to tell you when I'm good and where I think I'm good at. And I'm also going to tell you where I fall short, where I can improve. And when I see other people doing great, I'm going to tell you this person's doing great and this is why. Because I don't want everything to be about me. It's a follow existence. You know, everything is about you, in my opinion.
I really love how you define that, or are describing that, because that actually fits in with my definition of a humble or an arrogant person. A humble person has an accurate assessment of their strengths and weaknesses, and an arrogant person has an inaccurate assessment of their strengths and weaknesses. In other words, an arrogant person tends to think they're better than they are in certain areas, right? So I really love hearing you describe that. I know Coach Alton is wondering something.
Yeah, so it's your Instagram handle and even your name on Zoom, the Hybrid Raccoon. Tell us a little bit more about that nickname.
Yeah, so that nickname ended up coming up from the DecaFit World Championships in Atlantic City. Coming into that race, like, for some reason, I guess I got really sleepy. And when I get really sleepy, I probably get these terrible dark circles on the mountains. I'm also known for just eating more than so I'm walking, like, over between the hotel and the release, and I'm eating some junk that I got from 7-Eleven, and I've got these, like, big circles under my eyes, and my friend Mira, she turns to me, and she goes, you're just a raccoon of a human, aren't you? And I play right into it. I'm like, yeah, I am. I'm a hybrid raccoon, okay? That's what I am. I'm a hybrid racing raccoon. And so I'm just assuming, I was like, I don't love this. But I love everything about this whole, like, he's just, he eats junk. He's like, it will fight you in a dumpster kind of guy. And I'm like, sweet. He's going to change my list and handle the fire raccoon, and I can play with it, because that is genuinely who I am. It's a tremendous panda of a human who loves to eat. And so I ran with it, and people have really liked it. They really enjoy it. I get all kinds of, like, raccoon memes and stuff sent to me on Instagram consistently. Anytime that there's a raccoon video that blows up, it's in. So, and that makes me happy. So I'm like, I get to see little furry, silly animals. That's how the nickname came around. I don't think it's often that you get to give yourself your own nickname. Everybody just goes with it. So feel lucky in that case.
Right on.
And I had one more question. I saw on your Instagram story the other day, you said something about you're going to continue your tradition of not adhering and trying to qualify for the Olympics. I wasn't sure if that was a joke or what that was. If you could tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so I was sitting there watching the Olympics. I guess it was Sunday. And one thing, and my wife will tell you this, I'll crack myself up. I say things and make myself laugh. She's like, you're such a loser. And I'm like, no. So I said they wanted the Olympics, and I just learned how, exactly. I was like, for those of you wondering, I will not be competing in this year's Olympics. I abstain from the Olympic trials over meeting any of the qualification standards that are needed to make it to the Olympic trials, and I will adhere to this as I've had it since I was born. Because I don't have limits, man. The Olympics in anything. It'd be so stupid to put out there that I'm going to be like, yeah, I'm not getting this. But the only thing that I've ever thought that I could make it to the Olympics is, and I need to learn to roll water. is lightweight doubles rubber. It's the only thing that I have any chance. And the chance there is still thinner than this paper over here. But that would be it. And more likely than not, you will never see me in the Olympics for anything.
Unless there's a DECA Ultra.
If the DECA Ultra in there, I might be lying. Then hopefully I would be selected as part of the U.S.
You might have to break with your tradition.
I can tell you, break with that tradition. That's it.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, I know you got to go, and we always have one final question for it, yes. I'll ask it.
All right. So one of the questions we like to ask, maybe me and Coach didn't hit on something you wanted to talk about and ask quite the best question. So we like to finish up with one thing you want to tell the people, kind of your moment to just what you want to let the listeners know.
Yeah, I think one thing that I really want people to know, and one thing that has been big for me is the idea of in life and in any pursuit that you have. I've often thought that the one thing that keeps, you know, people going through some hardest circumstances that they will ever experience is hope. It's hope for something better. It's hope for whether it's, you know, you're going through chronic pain, whether you're going through just a terrible circumstance. If you ever lose hope, it's all gone. And for whatever you're fighting through, and whatever you're fighting through it, keep hope. Hope that it will get better. Because without hope, there's no life. And that's one thing that I've held to for a while.
Very, very well said. Yeah. You have to keep believing that things will get better and change. Well, it's been a pleasure to get to know you. Dylan, we look forward to seeing you in many more competitions, including, you know, Lord willing, we should see you put on quite a performance and what I'm sure is going to be a very stacked and competitive field in Florida this December for the DECA World Championship. And I know you're going to be right in there jabbing and scratching and biting and all the things a raccoon does to get to the top of that. Be right there in that mix. It's going to be fun to watch. And we look forward and wish you tons of success is what's coming. Thank you for taking the time to talk to our listeners and share with them some of the secrets of how you've gotten through the hard times and gotten to this excellent place of where you are.
Well, thank you guys very much. Yeah, I look forward to seeing y'all down in Florida. Keep judging hard, Ricardo. Keep that intensity. Thank you very much. And I hope everybody's enjoyed this little interview.
Yeah. Thank you for coming on, man. It was so awesome. It was so crazy watching you race at the Ultra. That was out of this world performance. Superhuman. I don't even know how you did it.
Did it? It was good time though.
All right. Well, hey, to our listeners out there, if you need any resilience training yourself, feel free to reach out to me at coach.ricardo or on Facebook as Ricardo Molinax. Or how about for you, Coach Alton?
Best way to reach out to me for coaching, Instagram, AltonMolinax17_, or on Facebook at AltonMolinax. Thank you guys for tuning in today. Go be resilient.